Okay, good afternoon and welcome. My name is Andrew Gaines. I'm proud to help host these podcast sessions. Today is Friday, April 22nd, 2016, and this is the first installation of these podcast sessions. Before we begin, I just want to remind our audience that your role here is to be spectators and audience members only. Unlike many of our other presentations, there won't be an active component. There won't be an opportunity for question and answer during the official recording. However, of course, the purpose of us all being here at the forum is to have really important conversations, so I encourage you to speak with the panelists afterwards about any of your questions you might have. So the recording will last about 30 minutes, and I believe that is all I have to report now before I hand it over to our moderator, Edie Demas.
Good afternoon, everybody, to our audience and to our panelists. I'm Edie Demas. I'm an extremely proud NYU Ed Theater alum. I have my MA and my PhD for this program, and I'm absolutely honored to have been invited to moderate these sessions celebrating 50 years of educational theater at NYU. This afternoon's podcast is the first one in a series of three, and I think it's particularly fitting that we're starting by examining the idea of mentoring and mentorship. On my way to the session, I was flooded with amazing memories of mentoring and, I hope, mentorship. And it's thrilling to be here to talk with our panelists on that topic today. I'm going to start. I just would like to say that these podcasts are meant to be conversational and free-flowing in tone, and they will indeed be that. And because we are dealing with an audio or oral form, I'm going to ask each of our panelists to introduce themselves so our future listeners will have an opportunity to associate a name with a voice. So we'll just move down the line, and then we'll get started discussing mentorship.
Hi, my name is Carol Miller. Delighted to be here. I'm a retired professor from the University of Victoria in Victoria, British Columbia.
Hi, my name is Juliana Saxton. I'm professor emeritus in the theater department at the University of Victoria in British Columbia, Canada. And I'm so pleased to be here and see so many familiar faces. Thank you for coming.
I'm Monica Prendergast. I now am honored to occupy Carol's former position in the Department of Curriculum and Instruction. My area is drama theater education at the University of Victoria. And I was mentored by Carol and Juliana in both my master's and my PhD graduate studies. And so I suspect that's why I might be on this panel.
Well, Monica, since you put yourself out there like that.
I outed myself.
Can you? We'd like to start today by discussing who is a mentor, particularly when you think about a mentor as compared to, you know, a teacher, a role model, or a coach, or those other kinds of relationships. What's particular about the mentor-mentee relationship?
Well, I'll start off by saying something I think Carol and Julianne and I agree on when we were discussing this topic, which we have done a couple of times, because there's nothing, no substitute for rehearsal, and that we really agreed that a mentoring relationship is extensive over time. That a short-term mentoring relationship may happen maybe in employment settings, but ideally, in our view, a mentoring relationship does happen over an extended period of time. And in my case, I met these two women in 1999. It's now 2016. So it has been an ongoing mentoring relationship that has shifted and changed, and we'll talk about that over a period of 17 years.
Would anybody like to add anything to that idea of what's a mentor?
Well, I would say that it's reciprocal, because I have learned as much from Monica as I hope she has learned from me. And it was always that kind. I started out as a supervisor, which is a very different kind of role, but that certainly evolved, as Monica said, over time, where it became a much more collegial relationship, mentorship, and now it has evolved once again. And it is that reciprocity that I think made for it to work so well, that we both felt that we gained from one another.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about mentorship is it's a word that people toss around rather lightly. And we did a little research on this, of course, knowing nothing. So that's always a good thing about a drama conference. It makes you learn something new, even if you think you're really stuck and comfortable where you are. And I thought, well, now who in terms of the mentors that I've had and been thinking about, you know, they aren't my teachers. Because when you're a teacher, you have 30 students in a classroom or 25 students in a classroom, and your job, your responsibility is to treat them all equally. And I often hear teachers saying, oh, you know, I'm mentoring a student. I'm thinking, I don't think you should be. I think mentoring is not about any job that you're actually getting paid for. So a consultant, a coach, a manager, those sorts of people are paid to help you and to be a part of your life for the length of time they see you need help or that you see you need help. But mentoring is something quite different from that. And somebody said, well, what about Brian Way? Because I write about Brian Way in the Peter Duffy book on reflective practice. And I said, no. Brian was a role model for me. I had no particular friendly relationship with him. I learned from him because he was my teacher at Lambda when I was studying in London. But he was distant from me. He's there somewhere up there, and I aspire to be there. So that's the role model. So I think that's something we learned, was that there's no money involved. It's really reciprocal. And there's a great variety of emotions at play in a mentorship, I think, which often are not in those other roles. Would you agree?
And that sense of mutual responsibility, that it wasn't one more so than the other, that it was much more mutual in terms of the relationship.
Mm-hmm. So what changes? What's the trigger from supervisor or teacher to mentor and mentee? As you've talked about an evolution, but the starting point or the catalyst is.
Well, I always like the metaphor that Bill Pienaar, the curriculum theorist, has for curriculum as a complicated conversation. And I would say that over the 17-year period that I've been working with Carol and Juliana, that it feels to me like a complicated conversation that gets interrupted. Sometimes months may go by, but generally, and certainly with Juliana and our book writing practice, we try to work together one day a week. Carol I see less often, but she often comes over for lunch, and then we slip into a conversation quite easily. And so that notion of a complicated conversation means that it's not just, you know, how are you doing? How are the grandkids? How are the kids? How's your life? Which is always
part of it.
It's not just that, but it moves into the work that engages us, which is the work that we do in our field as researchers and practitioners. So that's what has evolved, is this, that so letting go of the supervisory work of, okay, Monica, this thesis is okay, and this dissertation is okay, and off you go into the profession. The mentoring has become, as Carol said, more collegial, and really in terms of working with Juliana, much more of a writing partnership. And certainly that has been a huge gift and surprise in my life. I never envisioned that. And of course, I observe Carol and Juliana in their own writing partnership and their wonderful articles and books and chapters. So that, for me, I think has been a huge joy and privilege to have been pulled in. And with Juliana, it always is sort of about being pulled in. It's like, okay, now we're going to write a book. It's like, all right, okay, I guess we're going to write a book. So the work is always there. And that's certainly a huge part of the mentoring that I've received from Carol and Juliana, is this notion like there is a lot of work, and it's work that matters. It's really important work. It's really hard work. It should never feel easy. If it feels too easy, you're getting it wrong, because it's about constantly reflecting and constantly going through that cycle of, okay, let's think about what we've done and how we can do it better.
And the core of that is always about best practice. You know, that's, it seems that our conversations are always coming back to that. What can we do to really work to improve our practice?
This all sounds kind of academic and scholarly.
Well, it's also about how are the grandkids?
Yes, there is. I think at the heart of a good mentoring relationship, I guess, a kind of emotional context of shared feelings, of shared interest in each other's lives, but wonderfully not a prying kind of relationship. Mm-hmm. It's a very shared kind of thing. But it's important to know that, you know, if somebody's husband was sick, you know, last week or the last time you met, that how's he getting on? How's he? Because that's how you're kind of testing the temperature of how the work is going to be going today or how the conversation is going to be going today. So I think that that emotional context is really important. There's a lovely quote from a woman called Natasha Josefowitz in a book called Paths to Power, and she says that mentoring is a relationship whereby someone is able to use another as a brain to pick, and God knows I pick Monica's brain a lot, a shoulder to cry on, and a kick in the pants. And I think those are those sort of emotional contexts that I think are really important in a mentoring relationship.
It's lovely to hear the three of you speak about how all these facets of mentorship are entwined and they work together, and I would imagine different pieces, the emotional, the human, mm-hmm. the professional, the theoretical, kind of take this forefront at different moments, but right. there's always elements of all
and
of it.
And the long term means that we have watched not only ourselves grow, but our children grow, and know there's also a sense of connection about that personal. As Juliana said, we don't just say, okay, now we're going to work. There's always how things go. How is
we often
game?
Say, oh, well, now we're going to work, and yes. then suddenly the baseball game comes in.
Right.
Oh, I need to find it. So it's like putting a puzzle together in a way so that then when you're ready to work, it's kind of all in place.
Yes. Juliana's and I work, our work day together generally starts with what Juliana calls a gossy, which is, you know, sitting with our coffee and just kind of catching up with each other. And that often involves talking about going to the theater, which is, you know, my favorite thing to do. I review theater in Victoria. I often travel to go to the theater. I'm seeing 5, maybe 6 shows while I'm here, if I can squeeze in a 6th one. So, and Juliana goes to the theater in Victoria and elsewhere. And so that conversation, which is quite a casual conversation about sort of chatting about what we've seen and what we liked or didn't like about it, is part of the work. It's not separate from the work. And often threads of that conversation mm-hmm. will move into the office where we do our writing, and we'll pick up those threads and kind of weave it into whatever chapter or thing
and
we're working
I'm
on.
I'm reminded of the other day, Monica and we Juliana and I had seen the opera and Monica hadn't, but we knew Monica was reviewing it, right? So we were very circumspect about how much we could say, but it kept seeping into the conversation.
It wasn't a good production.
As we were writing, you know, and as we were talking about this, actually.
Yes, yeah. So that's, you know, that's the blend of kind of theory and practice, right, which Bowal calls praxis, or Ferry calls praxis, which is, you know, I think an important part of mentorship as well, mm-hmm. that in a field like ours, which is so practice-based, and yet has a flourishing of theory, certainly over the last couple of decades. And, of course, Carol and Juliana have contributed to that theorizing, but very rooted in practice. And if I brought something to our conversations, it was my growing interest in performance theory continued interest in performance theory and performance studies, and how I see that kind of working within educational theater and drama theater education.
And probably usefully for Monica, my utter inability to understand what the hell performance theory is. So, you know, as we've gone along, her explanations have got clearer and clearer, and I have been able to take them on board and become quite supportive in point of fact. But at first I was, oh my God, another bunch of terms. You know,
but that's the reciprocity,
that's
right?
Exactly.
Right? That's
right.
What Carol mentioned earlier, which is that there's this fluidity to the teacher, you know, the traditional sort of teacher-student relationship that we think about as mentorship that certainly stopped in my case and shifted into, okay, well, I'm writing a paper for my dissertation on performance theory, and Juliana needs me to talk her through it because she wants to get it. So I had to be the teacher and to bring her into this theory. I mean, you knew Schechter. It wasn't in Victor Turner. I mean, obviously she had read some of this stuff.
Sure.
But I was kind of bringing the newer stuff that I was immersed in.
And Derrida.
And your writing as poetry. I mean, that whole shift.
The art-based research.
When you began to do that for your dissertation. The conversations about that and how those were going to be framed and how they were going to sit within that body of work that you were doing.
And it was not always a happy voyage. I mean, I have I certainly have had a much better time than some colleagues of mine who had very difficult mentoring experiences in their graduate studies.
That's the next area that you also graciously put down to look at is what happens when a mentorship or that relationship is derailed, doesn't survive some of those shifts or new dynamics or...
I think we were talking a bit about this the other day. And for me, I think it would be about a breach of trust.
Mm.
I think it's when something happens where trust breaks down because that's so foundational to the relationship, whether it's that emotional piece or the academic piece, when that breaks down in some way for whatever reason. And I'm not sure once that happens how I would be able to repair that in all honesty. You know, it would be work on both our parts to be able to realize that shift.
Yeah, I had an interesting relationship with a graduate student, which was certainly a mentoring relationship for quite some time, and we got on wonderfully. I learned an enormous amount from her, particularly because I'm rather traditional and white and elderly, and she was not any of those things, and she taught me a lot about the world. Then there came a point in her life, and we had a really wonderful relationship, you know, in work and in play and in just living our lives together in a sense of being in the... She lived she lived in the downstairs part of my house, and she would come up and down. She was a great cook, wonderful cook. But she fell in love, and that relationship became extraordinarily important to her. I heard a lot about it because she needed somebody to talk to, and that was part of our relationship. And then I realized that the person she had fallen in love with was in a position over me, and I think it was not... He was concerned that perhaps the sharing relationship that we had was not appropriate in terms of what was going on. He didn't realize that I have no memory at all, so what she told me when he here came out there. And she broke that relationship in the only way she found she could, which was to just get up and leave without any explanation. And that, you know, they talk about very often that the mentee is the one who does break the relationship if there is to be a break, you know, time to move on, in many, many different ways. That was difficult. It was very difficult because I didn't know the reason why. It took me a long time to figure it out. Of course she had to do that. He was terrified. She was telling me all sorts of things that were going to compromise his reputation. And we know from our work with those of us who were at Cecily's workshop this morning how important reputation is to people who hold power. So that was a difficult situation, which took me a long time to get over. But, you know, I learned so much from her. I honor that relationship tremendously. And I think she does, too, although it's not together.
Yeah, I think that notion of power and a breach of trust is really important in terms of potentially derailing a relationship. And this really comes down to things like co-publication, right? And it's certainly in certain science areas, hard science areas in the academy, it's kind of just expected that a student's work will have their professor's name on it. And often the professor gets first author. And I, you know, that kind of norm in other disciplinary areas always makes me a little uncomfortable, because it really is about ownership of original ideas and material. I think it behooves mentors to think very carefully about how you negotiate co-authorship. Certainly I'm just starting to co-author with some students, and I always give them first author because they need it and I don't. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not everybody follows that rule, and that's fine, certainly my friend and colleague George Bellevaux at UBC really mentored that to me, even though we're, you know, close colleagues. But that was one sort of mentoring thing he did for me, which is that he's always done that with his students, and I want to follow that model. And certainly with Carol and Juliana, there was never any kind of like, oh, well, we're going to elbow in and see if we can get in on some of your publications. That was never. It was always really coming from Juliana. It was like, we have to write a book and we have to write it together. And I did get first author. I think Julianne has always taken second author.
P comes before S.
That's just the alphabet.
Yeah. Should have kept my unmarried name, which started with G.
Yeah. I had a friend who went back to her major because it started with D.
But I do think intellectual property is an aspect of mentorship that you can't neglect.
Yeah.
Because that's our product. That's what we produce in the academy. And so taking great care with how you work with a mentor-mentee in terms of that shared joint intellectual property, because I have stories to tell about how that can be derailed, and it can damage people's careers, it can damage their lives, it can be a very, very difficult experience. So, so obviously I haven't had to suffer that, but I do think that's something to think about.
Yeah. So we've heard, gained a lot of insight from the particular mentorship dynamics in your relationships, of the three of you.
And we're not asking you about yours, Edie. Would you like to contribute?
Sure, I could talk. Well, because the next question on the list is, who are your mentors? So it would be remiss of me to be in, I'm going to get emotional, to be in these rooms and not think about Lola and Nancy.
Yes.
Who were very powerful mentors to me throughout my life, both. And we made that shift from student to teacher. And, you know, without Lowell doing that thing, what was the phrase in your lovely quote about giving you a kick in the pants? Mm-hmm. Without Lowell doing that, I would not have my PhD. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something about that shared commitment. Somehow you know that even when it's bumpy or the power dynamics are murky, you hang in there and figure them out. And there's a give and take in that mm-hmm. has to make
it's
that possible.
Yeah.
That's the important thing.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we actually have talked about the fact when a mentorship stops being a mentorship and just becomes colleagues.
I started with Barbara McIntyre was my teacher in 1961. I'm pretty old. At the university, she was my first teacher, first class I went to at the University of Pittsburgh, and she was my teacher all through those 4 years. And then when I graduated, she became more of a mentor and gave me those pushes out the door and into a bigger context and encouraged me to do other kinds of work. And then she came to Victoria, and the relationship shifted again, and it became a much more collegial relationship at that point. So there was a real arc, and I knew her for, you know, over 30 years. So it went through an incredible arc to become colleagues and dear, dear friends throughout my adult life, certainly.
Because you lent Barbara your children. Barbara was a wonderful aunt, but she had no children of her own. And I know that Carol's children became very dear to her. And Carol was so generous in lending them out. Of course, all mothers and fathers are generous lending their children out to people who care for them.
Yeah. But she once asked me for advice about something, an academic issue, I realized it was that click that you go, it's totally shifted. And that recognition of that change was extremely powerful to me and really changed my own view of how we are in the world with each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was
I think a mentor sees something in you that you might not see in yourself. So Juliana mentioned earlier her early formative experiences with Brian Way as a role model and as a teacher. And I was very fortunate to work with Brian as well, quite some years after when he came to Canada and worked at the Globe Theatre in Regina. And I came out of my BFA in theatre in early 80s and worked for a season at the Globe with Brian. I didn't know who he was. I had no idea. Why would I? I mean, I was an actor. I didn't know anything about drama education. I went to the Regina Public Library and got out his book and read it. And so, because I knew I was going to be working with this man, so I thought, oh, well, this is really interesting. And I worked with him, and we created performances, and we toured them to schools. And of course, he did all of his creative drama workshops that he'd been doing, you know, for umpteen years at that point, because it was late in his career. But he was a marvelous teacher and a wonderful role model, as Juliana said. But there was one moment of mentoring from Brian that I will never, ever forget, because in hindsight, he saw something in me that at the age of 22, I was not able to see in myself. And it was close to the end of my contract, and we were in the green room at the Globe Theatre, and we were, I don't know, having a drink or whatever. Brian liked his drink. And we were chatting, and he said, Monica, in that very gruff sort of way, Monica, there's a teacher in you. And I just went, puh. I just completely rejected that notion. Of course, well, I don't want to be a teacher. I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to Toronto, and I'm going to be an actor. But of course, he was absolutely right. He could see my energy and the how I loved working in schools, because we were touring schools, and how much energy I got from the young people, from the kids. And he saw that in me. He saw that identity that I didn't even know was there. So an unfolding much later in my life, and I wish I had been able to track Brian down before he died a few years ago just to thank him for that. And I went through the same process with Carol and Juliana, because I only planned to do my master's, and then I was going to go back to be a high school teacher.
You were there for two years. That was it.
And I would go to meetings with Carol and Juliana, and they'd be going through my thesis and saying, well, this bit can go in the PhD. Oh, this bit. You could take this bit out, and we'll keep that for the PhD. And they kept saying this to me, and finally I got my gumption up one day and said, are you telling me that you think I should do a PhD?
Hello.
I mean, this was... And they both went, but absolutely, Monica. I mean, there's no reason why you shouldn't. And so that was an identity that, again, because mentorship is about, I think that notion of identity is really important, that a mentor sees something emerging from someone they're mentoring and gives it a shape. And names it. So what Carol and Juliana did for me was literally change my life. You can't say that about many people, because they saw an academic in me that I didn't know was there, because my identity at that point in my life was fully formed as a teacher. So these Brian and then Carol and Juliana were these two incredibly important mentors in my life, 20 years apart, who were able to name something in me that I had no idea was there. So, you know, obviously that's a gift that, as I said in a recent tribute to them, is a price above rubies. You know, which is a traditional Hebrew blessing, right? So, you know, it is a price above rubies. And the work continues.
Yeehaw.
It never stops. We've got much, much more work to do.
I think that's a really powerful way to close, and it kind of brings us full circle to that moment of what is it that shifts, you know, from this paid relationship. And it, I think it is that naming of something or seeing of something. I had a very parallel experience with Lola and Nancy.
Great.
I just going to say that Gavin Bolden was my mentor, and I knew that the relationship had shifted because he was staying at my house, and he came in one morning in his dressing gown and bedroom slippers bringing me a cup of tea, and I was still in bed. And he sat on the end of my bed, and we talked drama, and I thought, we're friends. We're friends now. Because we were seeing each other really at our unbest. So it's all about identity.
Yes, it's all kinds of ways of seeing.
Right. Ways of seeing. Ways of right. seeing.
Well, thank you all very, very much. It was a delightful conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you
for helping us.
My pleasure.
Yes. Thank you.